Welcome to the podcast on Natural Dallas, or The Pond for short. Here's where we take the measure of the natural world that is all around us,
probing its secrets,
and beholding its mysterious wonders.
The flora, the fauna,
the earth below our feet, and the sky above our heads.
All is fair game as we wade ever more deeply into the waters of discovery.
This podcast is brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library,
where we strive to connect the curious with the passionate
and foster a culture of lifelong learning.
The views shared on this podcast are those of its participants and not those of the library or the city of Dallas.
Let's get started.
Welcome to The Pond. Curious about which of our podcast episodes were most popular among listeners? While the Dallas Public Library Pond team prepares for the upcoming Nature Expo, we will count down our top five episodes of the year. On today's show, local herpetologist Carl Franklin shares his knowledge of and passion for turtles in the Dallas area. Listen for the best local places for viewing these fascinating reptiles. Carl serves as the biological curator and collections manager for the Amphibian and Reptile Diversity Research Center at the University of Texas at Arlington.
We are joined today by Carl J. Franklin, biological curator and collection manager at UTA's Amphibian and Reptile Diversity Research Center. Carl is a professional herpetologist and self-described card-carrying turtle fanatic. Thanks for joining us today, Carl.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
For those in our listening audience who may not be familiar with the term herpetologist, could you tell us what that means?
A herpetologist is someone who studies amphibians and reptiles. That's the broadest sense of the definition.
Okay. So what do you actually do in your position here at UTA?
I oversee the daily operations and functions here at the Amphibian and Reptile Diversity Research Center, or I'll just call it the museum because it's actually a museum collection we maintain. And I oversee that as well as the organization of it. And then I do participate in some collaborative projects from time to time.
I heard you speak on the UTA campus at the February meeting of the DFW Herpetological Society. Your enthusiasm for turtles was very apparent as you talked about a recent research project. Just what is it about turtles that causes you to label yourself a turtle fanatic?
Well, Greg, I like turtles.
You like turtles?
Yes.
You want to elaborate on that?
Okay, sure. It's just something that they've always appealed to me. And you know, it could be one glimmer of hope that I have a shred of decency to me in this lifetime. But I think that turtles are just an absolutely positive and wonderful component to our environment. And I've got a lot of lifelong fond memories with turtles, just like a lot of folks do. But just like anything else, you start looking a little bit closer and you start going through the layers, and there's a depth to the curiosity that can be plunged into.
Oh, great. Okay. So what exactly makes a turtle a turtle? What anatomical specifications do they have?
Well, the most noticeable one is the shell. And they have that shell on a turtle is built unlike any other structure on any vertebrate alive or any vertebrate animal that we have ever known of from the past. And to kind of put it into terms so that the listeners can better understand, because a lot of the folks here in Texas are going to say, well, you know, an armadillo has a shell, and how is that different? A turtle shell is different because basically, if you look at yourself, and a human skeleton, you can see our arms and our limbs and everything are on the outside of the rib cage. Turtles don't possess really a rib cage anymore. Instead, the shell has encompassed that. And so it would be like, if we were built like turtles, it would be almost like our limbs and shoulders and pelvis and everything were inside that rib cage with an extra adjoining layer of bone around it. And so that anatomical feature right there, the top part of the shell, the carapace, as well as the bottom part, the plastron, both of those are entirely unique adaptations that set turtles apart. Just one, or the most major one, that sets them apart not only from other reptiles, but other animals.
Sometimes people use the term turtles and sometimes they use tortoises. Could you elaborate on what the difference
well,
is?
Well, for those that flex between using jargon, don't worry. The last I checked, turtles don't care what we call them. And sometimes the turtles here in the United States, all tortoises are turtles. And of course, all turtles are turtles. But if you were to go to other countries, you might see that some of the common names are flipped around. In Australia, for example, the term tortoise is applied to many freshwater turtles. And in much of Europe, the term tortoise is a familiar term for turtle as well. Here in the United States and throughout the Western Hemisphere, the use of that term applies specifically to a terrestrial type of turtle that's within a very distinctive family of turtles known as the tortoises.
Okay, I got you. So, like other reptiles, turtles look very primitive. Is primitive an accurate adjective for turtles?
Well,
talk a little about their
evolution. Perhaps some people might think that primitive is a good term. I like to think of turtles, if you were to consider reptilian evolution, I like to put turtles at the zenith of that evolution. they've had a really successful body plan and very little deviations away from it. I think what it is, though, is that all reptiles, undoubtedly, there is that quality that harkens back to our imagination of primitive. And us being mammals and all, you know, they're animals that we can't relate to on the same level as we can perhaps dogs or a horse or a parakeet. All those are all animals that have that are endothermic. They're warm-blooded, and we can kind of better understand some of their interactions and maybe perhaps relate to them on higher levels than we can perhaps a turtle. Now, a turtle, just like all other reptiles, it has priorities that are basic and very much like ours. They want to have food. They want to have shelter. And as far as we know, they seek out companionship out of necessity and hormonal cycles as opposed to luxury or recreation or boredom. But I have to be honest with you. I don't speak turtle. And so as much as I would like to, I don't. And I haven't figured that out yet. So I can't speak for the potential unknown, untapped secrets of the dirty diaries of turtles and their envy and their jealousy and their lust and their hatred and their passions and all. So sorry if I leave that part of the question.
Well, that's all right. I guess that's reasonable that you might not be able to address that aspect of turtle psychology.
Maybe somehow in there we got an answer to why they're perceived as primitive. But
right. Well, you did allude to this a little bit in that response. Could you tell us a little bit more about the natural history of turtles? So what's the turtle life like?
Well, the turtle life depends upon, one, which type of turtle you're talking about, and then also where it's living, obviously. And we're looking at about, if you take all of the known turtle diversity, there's about 400 different types of turtles on the planet today. And many of those are mostly aquatic. So you have animals that live within a close affinity with water. You have some that are highly terrestrial, fewer of them that are highly terrestrial. And then you have the smallest percentage of them that are oceanic or marine dwelling. So all within there, you've got different caveats for various behaviors, various lifestyles, different ecological needs and different ecological roles that are fulfilled and such. And just thinking about this just now, some examples come to mind. If you went up into the, say you went up into a nice stream outside of Pennsylvania, some nice clear running creek out there, and you saw a North American wood turtle walk along and get onto the land, if you're lucky, you might be able to see that turtle get some earthworms by stomping his feet on the ground.
Okay, cool.
And drumming the worms out. They can actually do that. If you were, say, in a nice forest in Vietnam, perhaps a place where there still were decent numbers of turtles, you might find a type of turtle known as a Mahout's box turtle eating and one of the curious things with that type of turtle is that they'll actually take their front feet, like little hands, and bring the food to their mouth with it. And so the lifestyle of the turtle, wow, we could go on. I think it would exceed the scope of our time here this afternoon.
Okay, well, I wish we had...
But I want the listeners, I hope that grabs some people. And, and so they start to look at turtles and what they're doing whenever they're out there.
All right. Well, I wish we did have time to explore that broader aspect of it. For the moment, why don't we narrow our scope down, and maybe you could talk a little bit about turtle species that are common in Dallas County. Maybe what are turtles that people living in the area might be able to encounter either in the greenbelt across their street or in natural areas or...
Well, this is a great time of year to address that because a lot of folks are noticing turtles moving around and moving about. And one of the big reasons for that is that you have animals that are in the springtime and in the summer. You have turtles that will go out to look for places to nest. And you'll have turtles just kind of maybe going to, a different neck of the woods for them. And so one species that... During my childhood here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and up until maybe the past 15 or 20 years that used to be fairly common were the box turtles. And that's a turtle that used to be seen just real commonly crossing the roads and all. So box turtles are something that there has been a notable decline in them around here. And a lot of that's been from habitat loss, and to another extent it's been collection for the pet trade, which is now illegal in Texas. You can't take box turtles out of the wild and sell them anymore. And that's a good thing. The other turtles that folks in the Dallas-Fort Worth area can appreciate are we've got a pretty good diversity of aquatic species here. For that, I would say if you got a pair of binoculars, you can really have a good time going out and enjoying some of our native turtle fauna. And there's the good thing is that in Dallas and in Fort Worth, this area, there's a number of places where folks can get out and see these animals.
Could you give a couple of examples?
I'd be delighted to. one place that's good, and you might come across a box turtle on your hike there, is the Trinity River Audubon Center. That's a beautiful sight, and they've got a really nice bridge out there, and there's an interesting diversity of turtles. There's at least three or four species on that you can see most days out there basking and such. There's red-eared sliders, Mississippi map turtles, river cooters, spiny soft-shell turtles. Those are out there. And then, of course, all the other environment and such and the other richness that you can experience in that great Trinity Forest. Another place that I've gone to for years, anytime I just want to kind of go stare at turtles real easily, is Leonhardt Lagoon out at Fair Park. And just walk, I was there just this past Sunday. A great population of old snapping turtles. There's red-eared sliders, there's cooters, musk turtles, soft-shell turtles. And you've got at least five species of turtles out there that folks, that are, for the most part, really acclimated to people coming and feeding bread to ducks and things. And the other cool thing about that location is that if you had an intrepid nerd out there that was really interested in learning more about the private lives of Dallas turtles, that's a unique location, an urban population of turtles that seems to be thriving and doing well, and there's no life history studies being done there. And then, of course, if you get too hot and stuff from walking around the lagoon, you can go directly across the lagoon to the old Dallas Aquarium. And you can see other turtles in there, too. So that's just a couple of places right there. The Fort Worth Nature Center Lotus Marsh has a beautiful boardwalk, and that affords viewing opportunities of turtles. Trading House Creek that runs right in front of the campus here at UT Arlington.
Okay.
For students, it's and believe it or not, I used to spend an inordinate amount of time staring at turtles in that creek. But so, those are just some of the just a handful of easy places people can go to.
Those are great recommendations. I'm going to put a couple of those at the top of my list. You have a website devoted to Texas turtles, www.texasturtles.org, which has a lot of great information about turtles. One topic the website covers is threats to Texas turtles. Do turtles face significant threats?
They absolutely do. You know, turtles, they go back, gosh, almost 300 million years. And they lived through dinosaurs, ice age, all kinds of stuff. And then you had these mostly hairless, two-legged, upright walking primates that come along. That's their biggest danger, are us. But just as we're their biggest danger, we're their biggest enemy, their biggest threat, we can be their biggest advocates, and we can be aware of them. So the threats that have really hit turtles worldwide, the biggest thing is human consumption. A lot of folks in the Dallas-Fort Worth area may be surprised, especially younger listeners might be really surprised to know how common turtles appeared on menus or kitchens in the United States all the way up until the early 1970s. Richard Nixon, during his inaugural luncheon, he wanted diamondback terrapin. And
really?
The terrapins were in such short supply, it took them over 2 weeks to harvest enough terrapins to feed everyone that. Oh gosh, you could look at old cookbooks and find things for snapper stew and soft shell turtles. And the Eastern Hemisphere and most notably Asia in the form of China have been the biggest driving factors for the consumption of turtles. Up until 2007, there was almost an unlimited amount of take that you could legally do from turtles in the wild here in Texas. And there were just maybe two or three entrepreneurs, I'll use the term loosely there, that were profiting from this and just taking thousands of pounds of turtles every week from Texas waters to DFW Airport to be exported to Asia. Anyone familiar with turtle biology will tell you can't manage turtles like you do white-tailed deer, and that's unsustainable. So it was of good fortune that Texas Parks and Wildlife banned the commercial activity of all except three types of turtles, the red-eared slider, the soft shell, and the snapper. And of those three, I think that some reevaluation should be taken. I'm of the opinion and thought that snapping turtles should not be included in that.
Why is that?
Because of their biology. Whenever turtles lay eggs, you're looking at, on average, about an 85% mortality of just the eggs themselves. Things like skunks and raccoons and armadillos, all kind of fire ants, whatever, will often predate upon the eggs. Then as the babies hatch, the surviving babies have about the same odds in nature. You've got babies that come out and they could be picked off by birds, by bigger fish, by a bullfrog, lots of things. And then of those, these are also slow to mature animals. Many turtles in our area take at least 10 years to reach sexual maturity. And so they have to run the gambit of survival. Now, the plus to being a turtle is that what we know now about long-term life studies of turtles is that female turtles do not experience menopause and male turtles do not experience andropause. And so they reproduce until they die, and they have to, just to keep the numbers up. So with snapping turtles, they fall into the same reproductive trend that all the others do. We just have to be aware of that with those. And that's science that has to be made available to policymakers, and legislation will often want science to back up policy. So that's my reasoning on that. And the soft-shelled turtle, there's an organization known as CITES, the Convention of International Trade of Endangered Species. Soft-shell turtles were just recently placed on the lowest tier recognition of CITES, which means that there is an export limit that can be done, and that extra permits have to be obtained before soft-shell turtles can be exported internationally. And so it's my hopes that those types of paperwork hurdles can help save some turtles.
Okay. Makes sense.
But yeah. The red-eared slider, the really common one that everyone sees and everything out there, it's actually on the top 10, the list of the top 10 most invasive, most dangerous species on the planet. And that's because they are really good at reproducing. They're really good survivors. And they're just really, really cute whenever you got these little bitty quarter-sized cutesy little turtles. And people will often buy them and they get big and, you know, people don't want to hurt a turtle and they release them. And so red-eared sliders have been, are now just about in every continent except for Antarctica and on almost every country in the planet. And they've actually hurt some of the other turtle populations that were native to other places in the world. I think that is maybe one species that could handle the commercial utility. But the others, I don't see how it could be sustainable.
Makes sense to me. Any other threats? Habitat availability, is that a concern
that is,
at all?
That is a huge concern because you have things where habitat is taken and land can be divided and parceled up and developed and changed and altered in ways that not just turtles, but lots of other wildlife won't be able to have a shot at it. A couple of words that kind of strike fear a little bit into I think those of us that are a bit more biophilic is economic growth, because that usually means more bulldozers, more cement, more asphalt, more, and less at the same time. Waterways are something also that are important to maintain, and the use of water, and certainly in other parts of Texas and as well as up here, is an important issue. But I think that we do have a shot at maintaining turtles for the future of Texas and for future Texans. And because turtles are an easy sell, and it's easy to get people ignited with it, and children love them. They're the one reptile, I think, that people will say, oh, that's cute. You go to a Bass Pro, you see the aquarium, and people don't say, oh my God, look at that record size bass. Everybody says, come here, look at the turtle. You hear, hey, mama, look at the turtle. Or when people are feeding ducks, they're like, oh, yeah, look at that duck. Hey, look at that turtle. So turtles are a real powder keg of positive potential for the human race, I think.
I never really looked at it quite that way, but now that you mention it, I can see that. And Carl, we really appreciated having you today. I could keep listening for hours.
Oh, but, stop.
But thank you so much for speaking with us and sharing not only your knowledge and expertise, but your passion for turtles. So
thanks for coming out.
We hope that will be infectious to our listeners and that they will be able to take the opportunity and get out and see some of these local places you mentioned earlier.
And if they have any questions, feel free to visit the website, texasturtles.org, and there's also a Facebook group, too, Texas Turtles. And it's a good community of folks that have, in my opinion, some really high taste and standards for their nature appreciation.
Okay, great. And I might just throw in a plug also. I see you're wearing a DFW Herpetological Society T-shirt.
Yes, I am.
A group in the area which is interested and fascinated and passionate about turtles and other herps, reptiles and amphibians. And so it's a local group that's open to whether you're amateur or professional.
That's right.
And one I recently got involved in myself. So there's opportunities to observe. There's opportunities to participate, to learn more. So, again, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me today, guys. It's been a blast.
You've been listening to The Pond Podcast, brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library, where we inspire curiosity, connect people, and advance lives. See you next time, and until then, keep your eyes open for the natural world all around us.